The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice. Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns.
If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911. In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still.
I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Big news to say, we've got 60 episodes in the can, as they say in the business. So we're ready for episode 61, and a huge announcement. We're changing the name and the format of the podcast, and I have a new co-host. Welcome, everyone. I'm Chad Douglas, and I've lied to you completely. Nikki Shields is still here. We are not changing a thing, but we are talking about lies.
So everyone listening is either like super relieved or horrified that we're not changing anything. So lying. Why do we want to talk about lying?
I think first we need to decide what is a lie versus, like, you know, you'd hear like a little white lie versus a big bold-faced lie. What is a lie?
So there's so many different ways that we can be sort of dishonest, right? So a fib, you can lie by omission, just like by not saying something, not sharing something. You can lie to protect someone. You can bend the truth. You can have a little white lie. You can, you know, make believe and pretend can be a version of lying. We lie for lots of different reasons. Sometimes it's, you know, like the convenience factor, like I want to go get ice cream. Well, the ice cream shop is closed, honey. Sorry. But, you know, the ice cream shop is open, but kids don't know the difference, right? Yeah. So there's so many different things. Maybe we lie and we say, oh, you did such a good job at your soccer game, but like, maybe the kid ran the wrong way the whole time.
Scored for the other team. We've all been there. You've got a thesaurus and we've learned all about lying. You can even lie down, right? Or is it lay down? No, you lie down.
Yeah.
Okay. So when is it okay to lie to your kids? That seems like an awful question, but we've all done it. Haven't we?
For sure. Before we talk about like, when is it okay? Like first let's confess our own lies. What is something you've been dishonest about?
I grew up Catholic. I am not doing like reconciliation with you in our little room here that we do this. So I have to confess my lies.
Yeah. What's something you've
I didn't know this was going to be part of it. So you have to go first.
Okay, perfect. I was ready for that. I knew you were going to volley that back my way. So, I think there are certain, you know, mythical creatures that, you know, parents promote to their children that we jumped in head first in the world of magic, and I didn't think anything of it. And so I now, you know, I've done a little digging since then, like, was that harmful? Could that hurt? And we'll get back to that in a little bit. I have definitely said things like, no, they close in 20 minutes. We don't have time to go. Or no, we're busy that night. You know, when maybe somebody wanted to have a sleepover. Like there are some convenience things I've said that weren't necessarily true.
Yeah, I can't think of anything specific, but I will just echo what you just said because I've done the same things. Oh, the place is closed. We can't go get whatever ice cream, like you said earlier. Or we're busy this weekend. So and so can't come over and play or spend the night or anything. So. Harmless lies. I don't think I've ever done anything that was just a bold face lie out of bad intentions. Someone might call me out on that, but
so. When your kids listen to this in a few years, they're gonna be like, listen here, Dad. But ultimately, I mean, there's a wide spectrum of just like anything else in parenting. There's answers across the board, you know, and some would say any sort of lie is wrong. Some would say a little bit doesn't hurt as long as, you know, you keep it within these boundaries. And then there's probably parents who are like, eh, whatever. So, I mean, it's really, people are going to have different opinions about it. But ultimately what it comes down to for me, you know, as a mental health professional is the lie that you're telling or the lie that you told, is it going to harm your child's trust in you? Is it going to, is it, you know, who are you like protecting with the lie? Who are you potentially hurting with the lie? Is it something that, yes, it's convenient or helpful now, but maybe in the future, it's going to hurt your child when they find out the truth? Like, you really kind of have to dig in. Like, could this cause confusion? Could this cause your child to not trust you later on? Will it, when they find out, you know, that you lied about this particular thing? Is it going to make them question other things you said and done? And that's kind of the line for me. Like, just when we're talking about diagnosis, it's like when it's causing problems in your life, that's right. How we know that it's clinical, right? When it comes to being dishonest, it's how much potential harm is there in it. That's kind of where the line is, right? If it's going to cause problems for your child, it's probably not a good idea.
But how do you know?
So, I mean, this is another thing where it's age dependent, but also mm-hmm. child dependent. So like little kids who are 3 and 4, they're so honest, like they don't know how to lie, right? Like, you know, when a young child has developed the cognitive ability to like not tell the truth, because they'll experiment with it, right? Sure. They'll play around. No, I didn't eat that, or I didn't do that, or I didn't, you know. But when they're really little, they'll just say whatever they think. And it might be insulting, it might be rude, it might be something you wish they wouldn't say. But ultimately, they don't really know how to lie. So young kids, research has shown that they are less impacted by dishonesty from their parents, because they don't necessarily know the difference, right? So after the thing has been said or done, the kid isn't going, I think they lied to me, because they don't know that that's a thing. But once you get to age 5, your ability to kind of differentiate is developing. It's getting stronger. And so the more lies that a parent might tell, whatever the form, and again, we're not always just talking about blatant, bold-faced, like lying to your child. We're talking about a lot of different variations of this, but like once they get to age 5, the more of this that happens, the more potential there is to be harm to the child, right? So because it's essentially the more dishonesty that comes from an adult, the less trust that child has in that adult. And then that creates problems, because when kids don't trust their caregivers, you know, that, oh gosh, that's kind of the root of a lot of difficulties later in life.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the boy who cried wolf, right?
Yes.
Lie. And then when the wolf actually came, nobody believed him. So it's, mm-hmm. if you are telling all these lies that might seem innocent to your child, and then one day you've got something that you are not lying about, are they going to believe you?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the risk in it. So, I mean, there's been a lot of research about these mythical creatures, and does it harm children to engage in that kind of thinking and sort of magical wonderment and that kind of thing? And the research doesn't think so, right? The research doesn't think it's harmful, okay. But it also kind of depends on how it's carried out, how long it lasts. If your child doesn't learn the truth of some of those things until they're 13 or 14, I'm imagining there's going to be more of an upsetting revelation to them, and they're going to have a little harder time processing it than a child who discovers a little bit earlier. So it depends on the meaning behind it, you know, and how you explain it to your child. Because, you know, if you kind of pull them into the magic of it all, and they're able to kind of continue that forward with younger siblings or their own children, there's really no harm in that. But there can be exceptions to that. There could be kiddos that find that more troubling.
Well, and the problem with that specific example is the parent can have all well and good intentions, but if another kiddo says something, then their child brings it up, and they're kind of, the parent is then off guard and can't really maybe speak as eloquently to, oh, what I plan to tell you was, because then it's just like vomit of the mouth, mm-hmm. which is pretty much where vomit comes from. So
yeah, I was going to say that's the same as the regular kind, which I don't like. So
yes, we know. Okay. So here's kind of a deep question, and somewhat timely, because November is National Adoption Month. So let's talk about that, because I know some kiddos who are adopted who have known since they were born, or, you know, if they were through foster care, they kind of get the idea there. And then I know some folks who didn't find out until they were older, some of whom were adults or right on the cusp of being an adult, and it's hard to take for them sometimes. So what's a parent to do in that situation? Because that's a trust issue right there, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, you answered the question in your question, which
I'm good
is
at that.
It's true. I would say in most situations with adoption, the longer you wait, the more potential there is for a loss of trust or kind of an identity crisis for the person in question. Because, you know, there's a natural stage where you want to know where you came from, and you know, you're interested in your genetic background, and you're interested in how you are connected to these people that you live with. And if you suddenly find out at 12, 13, 14, 15 that you are not biologically connected to the family that you've always believed you were, like, there's some trauma in that. And so it's absolutely, you know, that is a sensitive subject. And I've sat down with parents who believe they never want their kids to know. I've sat down with parents who were open from day one. And every family has to find their own journey. But ultimately, there is more risk of trauma and it impacting the child negatively if you wait a really long time to let them know that they were in fact adopted, because that's just one of those things that eventually comes out. That would be a hard, you know, lie to hold onto, or a hard secret to keep for forever. And it has some great risk for the relationship if it is discovered later.
And I think things have changed since you and I were younger. And I'm not going to say it wasn't accepted back then, but it was like, you know, almost a teasable thing, where now it's so much more accepted because it's so common that you have blended families and adopted and foster care families and everything. So that is a good thing that societal changes have improved.
Yeah. And I think there's more representation of different types of families in the storybooks that we read and the shows that we watch. You know, lots of TV families are, you know, single parent families or blended families or families with adoption. And so it's really cool to see that happening. And so, yeah, I think it's a lot easier now than when we were kids, for families to kind of know what is best for the kids and to kind of start in a good place. But I've certainly seen families where, you know, that information wasn't available in the early days, and it wasn't until, you know, much, much later in the child's life when they started to piece it all together. And it creates, you know, heartbreak and hardship for the family to work through, because then of course there's that, you know, crack in the foundation of trust. And so it, you know, adoption is a really critical subject in terms of what do we tell, what do we not tell, what do we tell other people, how do we talk about this? And I don't think the answers are easy, but I think I could say, you know, more information sooner is better. Like when they're super little, they don't know the difference. No. They don't care that much. They're not talking about it or thinking about it. They just need to know that they are safe and loved. But as they get older, they may start to ask questions. And at the point that they're asking questions, they probably need more information.
And so off of that, and really with any lie, if the kid comes to you with questions about something that you've lied about, is this the time to come clean and tell the truth, or fill them with more lies?
I think it depends a little bit on the scenario, but if, you know, ultimately my rule of thumb is if a kid's asking questions, they need information, and it's always okay to like correct for an error, apologize, own something. Those are really, really good things to model for your children. And so if a kid comes to you and is kind of picking apart something that maybe you weren't as honest about, that is a good time to say, well, you know, I might not have been as honest with you as I should have been, and here's why. And here's what I'm going to tell you now. But so when it comes to being truly honest with our children, a lot of it is developmental, right? We want to choose the information we give them based on the information they need and the developmental level that they're at. Like, are they ready for this information? Can they process this information? And sometimes I think, you know, of course, most parents are like, oh, I would never lie to my kids. But when we really are honest with ourselves and we dig in a little bit, we do. And oftentimes it's for good reason. And so I don't want anybody judging themselves if they have told their children untrue things, because I know that it's natural, just like, I mean, we just all do at some point. But if you're faced with the opportunity to correct for it or give your child the information they need, it's going to go a long way towards healing that relationship if you can come, you know, forward with the truth and help them understand the why behind not having it initially.
Now, are we ready to answer the title of the episode? When is it okay to lie to your children? She said, hold off.
Darn it. I mean, I guess, is the answer sometimes when they're really little and if it helps them and doesn't hurt them? Is that an answer?
You sound very confident. You're also the expert. So
I don't know.
I think
on this one.
Well, I think what you said earlier about, like, is it going to traumatize them? Is it going to have a bad effect on them later? I just kind of go back to, I don't know in the moment. You know, if it's something as simple as, do we have chicken nuggets? Nope, we're out. Well, oops, they're down there. Maybe you lied and you didn't know about it, versus, I don't know, something that's, you know, is the mythical creature around. That's what's so hard about it, is you don't know.
And they're really, I don't think that there is the straightforward answer. Like so many other questions we've posed before. I don't think there's, you know, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. I think it's like many other subjects. Here are some factors to keep in mind, and here's some things to be aware of, and then make the best decision for you and your family. So, you know, on the subject of mythical creatures, like, if that's wrong, I'm going to parent jail, because we have had so much fun with that over the years. And I would be heartbroken to have not been able to do those things. And I have conversations with my kids about it now, because of course now they understand. And they'll joke and laugh and be like, oh, I was traumatized, mom. You know, but they have fun with it still. And they understand why it was important. Yeah. And they don't jump to that conclusion of like, well, you made this up, would you make this up too? There hasn't been that.
Okay.
And so in general, you should be consistent with your kids and you should make sure that they have the information they need. And so if, you know, no, we can't go because it's closed. I mean, does that harm anyone? No. But if they find out it's open, now you have to kind of call yourself to the carpet, right?
If you'd like to read between the lines with this next story, this was not a parent. This was an older sibling who lied to me, and see if you think it had any trauma in it. He had gone rabbit hunting and came home one day and showed me his kill of a rabbit and horrified me.
Mm-hmm. Did he lie to you about the rabbit?
No, he told me it was a certain rabbit.
Oh, I get it. Oh, so sorry. I wasn't reading behind.
Okay. Silly rabbit tricks for you. Be very, very quiet. It was that kind of thing.
Well, and I think that's an important thing with this topic of mythical creatures is that, like, if somebody's exploiting a child's belief in those things, that has the potential to create some damage and some fear where it doesn't need to be, because this stuff is supposed to be fun and exciting. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be horrifying. And so that experience, definitely, I wouldn't recommend.
Yeah, thanks. One star, do not recommend.
Yep.
What about with children, when they start to lie to their parents, what do the parents need to do?
First of all, kids will experiment with it. Like they're going to. Around 4 or 5 years old, you're going to get your child's first lie. And it may be cute, may be humorous, it may scare you, but they're going to do it.
Can I interrupt you for a second? How, why do they start around 4 or 5? Like what leads them to try to experiment with not telling the truth?
Just cognitively, their brain has developed to the point where, you know, they're learning more, I'm going to say, defense mechanisms to kind of protect. So typically their initial lies are going to be things like, no, I didn't do that, because they don't want to get in trouble, right? So kids at this age have learned, like, there's right and wrong, and I could get in trouble for doing the wrong thing.
Okay.
And so
did you eat a popsicle? No, I didn't.
No,
that's
I didn't.
That's why you're purple around your lips.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Gotcha. And that's typically what you're going to see. And it'll, like I said, it could be cute, kind of funny, because you're like, yeah, you've got crumbs all over your face. It's obvious you ate that. Or you put the paint on the wall. You've got a handful of red paint.
Like, of course you're red-handed.
Yeah, literally. So like you're going to see it happen, but that isn't necessarily troubling or problematic, right? That doesn't mean they're going to turn into a pathological liar. Mm-hmm. It just means that they're cognitively developing that skill of being able to, like, hey, I don't want to get in trouble, so I'm going to do what I can to protect it. So that's when you start to, you know, teach honesty and reward honesty. And so it's really good as a parent to start, you know, when your child does tell you the truth about something and you know it was hard for them to do it, to acknowledge that. Like, hey, you were honest with me. You told me what happened. That was probably pretty hard to do because you thought you might get in trouble. So I'm really proud of you for being honest. And so just kind of starting that early on is really important. But research has shown that kids who are lied to frequently in childhood are more likely to then turn around and lie to their parents later on. And so parental dishonesty certainly can, like, open that door to significant trust problems within the relationship. And so it's important to be aware of how honest are you being, because it may come back to haunt you when your child's a little bit older.
I mean, honesty is the best policy, right? We all learn that. It's probably on the Everything I Learned About Life I Learned in Kindergarten poster somewhere. You mentioned in there the term pathological liar. Is that an actual medical diagnosis or condition?
No, it's not in the big book of diagnoses, but it really just means, like, somebody who, you know, in my interpretation would be somebody who just lies all the time and maybe isn't always even sure what the truth is because they've been dishonest about so many different things. And so typically, like, there would be other diagnoses that could potentially go along with that.
Okay.
That would kind of account for why they behave in that way. But certainly, you know, a lack of honesty and a lack of trust in your, like, primary caregiving relationships with parents and stuff as you grow up, those things are going to impact how you treat honesty in your future relationships. And so is it important that parents manage this well? Yeah, because, you know, kids then go on to repeat, you know, some of the patterns that they experienced early on in their later relationships. So it is worthy of some attention, but I also don't want to overstress it, because I think it's just another part of, like, this complicated thing we call parenting. And, you know, you got to live and learn, right? You're going to say something, you're going to get caught up in it, and then own it, right? Apologize, come back around, and then you show your child how to do that correctly, and then no problem, right?
And that's hard to do. Going back to the beginning of the episode, we talked about changing the name of it, of the podcast. Maybe we should change it to Parenting is Hard, because we talk about how hard it is.
Like every time.
Every episode, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's not a lie. Where do you land, Nikki, on lying to your children to kind of change their behavior?
A lot of parental lying does kind of stem back to child's behavior. So, I mean, an example that comes to mind would be, if you don't stop that, I'm gonna, but then they don't. And that's a form of dishonesty. Like you're not following through with what you said you were gonna do.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're not gonna go to this restaurant because of your behavior, or I'm not gonna buy you X, Y, and Z because of your behavior. But then going on and doing that, like, that's showing inconsistency between your words and actions, mm-hmm. which is a form of dishonesty with kids and can be problematic, because then they don't know that you mean it when you mean it, just like you mentioned before, that the boy and the wolf and all that.
Yeah. That book or something.
The book or the child story, whatever.
And I'm a big stickler of sticking to the punishment, but I have been known to scale back if something happens in between. We've had a good conversation. The child sees where they went wrong, and I'll throw out, I just did this yesterday. So you did this. Tell me next time this happens how you should handle it. So it's like working through those problems. And it's like, okay, well, I told you couldn't play the gaming system for 80 more years, but I'll let you play this weekend, kind of thing. So yeah, a little dishonesty, but I'm also falling back on it.
You're correcting on something and identifying something more effective, because I think this is oftentimes where that disconnect, or even we can look at it as dishonesty, develops, is we have a knee-jerk response in the face of a behavior. And so we say the thing, or we whatever, and then when we have time to calm down and think through it, we actually have a better idea that will teach the lesson, that will help the child learn, because discipline is supposed to be about learning and growth and continuing to develop skills. It's not about penalty or punishment. Or, you know, and so I think this is a great place with that, you know, you can use these moments, change your approach, isn't being dishonest or, you know, inconsistent. It's coming back and correcting, which kids seem to want to do.
And you've said before in episodes about how your behavior is going to be modeled by your child. Like, they're mm-hmm. big sponges and they're just soaking up everything you do. So if they see you mm-hmm. do something like that, then they're more apt to go, okay, this is how mom or dad reacted. And I get that.
Yeah. And we all work with and spend time around adults who haven't learned to, like, reflect on their behavior and then, like, pivot and come back and say, how can I, you know, handle this better? How can we work through this? And so I think it's such an important skill to be teaching in our homes early, so that we can all grow up to be cooperative adults who can work together.
I also know some adults who have not been taught that skill, and they're not going to ever come back and apologize.
Exactly. So we need to teach that.
Or just stop being around those people. It's November, right? We said National Adoption Month. It's also November. It's all right to say no to people. That's what I'm trying to do this month. Moving on to, in the last episode, we talked about difficult conversations. What about not so much telling the truth when it comes to death or the talk of the birds and the bees and so on?
Well, and Sarah gave a really good example of that, of an individual who they didn't share with their family what they were going through medically. And so then when the person passed or their illness escalated, they didn't know what was going on. And I think that when it comes to kids, we think we're protecting them by not sharing, you know, what's going on in the relationship or what's going on in the family situation or whatever. And we're not necessarily protecting them if we're not giving them the information they need to adjust and cope with what's happening. And so I know that, like, I can't remember what the question was, but one of my kiddos asked, you know, the question, something to do with the birds and the bees. And I remember, you know, I was driving and I was like, if I just turn the music up and pretend I didn't hear her, can I avoid
this? Too bad you listen to Barry White.
Got weird. But so I think I said something like, oh, I don't know anything about that. You better ask your dad, because I'm a jerk of a co-parent. And so these things happen. But, like, that was dishonest. It was an opportunity to have a meaningful conversation with her about something that she was going to need to know more about. But I didn't know how to do it in an age-appropriate way.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times when we don't tell our kids the things they need to know, it's because we don't know how. And that's, you know, plugging last episode, I think Sarah's stuff is going to be really helpful to families, because it gives you the language to talk about the really hard things. I think probably a really important point of this episode is, we're not saying that parents are out there, like, just blatantly lying to their kids, but there are a lot of reasons where we're not sure if the truth is okay, or we don't know how to share the truth in a way that our child can developmentally handle it. And so this can be really tricky to navigate.
And that's all age appropriate too, because if you have a family member who's sick and likely to pass on, and you have a 15-year-old, you can go in and say, look, this is what's happening. If you want to come say goodbye, if you've got a 2-year-old or even a 4-year-old, that's like, where's so-and-so? I haven't seen them for a while. Then you can, you kind of age base it on how deep the lie goes, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So the lesson of this episode then is it is okay sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's there's the whole lot of variables, as there often are in these episodes. Right. So
yes, lie with caution.
Lie with caution. And again, think with the end in mind. That's one of those seven habits, right? Those Stephen Covey habits is like, is this going to affect your child down the road in a traumatic way or a bad way? And when I say down the road, is that years? Is that maybe tomorrow? So right. I guess that's the thing to do. Best of luck. It is always hard to do this and think on your feet when you're confronted with it as a parent. So best of luck, parents. We do appreciate you listening to our episodes and sharing any episode you think someone else could listen to and get a benefit from. On our next episode, we're going to do a Look Who's Talking episode. We've done a couple of those in the past of folks who were really trying to break the stigma of mental health using different things. We have a couple gentlemen who have really broken down some walls using music. So I'm real anxious for this episode to drop because I think music's so important, and we're going to see how it can help and benefit those with mental health conditions and really anybody. Our whole goal in starting this podcast was to start a conversation, and that conversation continues with you